Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm your host, Dr. Pat Basile, and this is one of the many hours of programming that we bring to you each and every week. I want to give you a little bit of information on how you can find out more about what we are up to. You can go to my website, www.drpatshow.com. That's drpatshow.com. Check it out. You're going to want to take a little look at the newsletter that we've got up there. It's a free newsletter. Send it out once a week to many of you that are members, and we let you know about upcoming events. For example, you'll find out that I'm going to be doing a talk this weekend in San Francisco, and be able to join me at the Hotel Diva on Saturday. So that's one of the things you'll find out. Also, many of you participated in the sauna that we gave away, a $2,000 infrared sauna. And so we've got lots more coming up. And you would have found out about my guest today. And I'm thrilled to be speaking to you about an individual who has on his website, this is what I love about the people I get to chat with. When you go to the website, this is the welcome you get. It's greetings and welcome to alangregorman.com, a place where I hope you will find a world of fresh ideas to unlock the brilliance in yourself, your colleagues, and your organization. I mean, how many websites do you get to go to that have that kind of information about what the website's going to be like and the energy of the individual that is greeting you there? And so let me introduce you by giving you a little information about Alan and who he is. Many people say he is one of the most original thinkers in business today. You will find by the end of today's show that beyond being one of the most original thinkers in business, he is one of the most original people that is helping each of us understand our brilliance. You're going to find out about this from him, and you're going to find out about the genius in every single one of us. He is the president and chief innovation officer of VentureWorks, Inc. This is a consulting firm based in Washington, D.C., and this firm helps individuals and organizations develop winning strategies and create successful new products, services, and ventures and ways of doing business. Today, we're going to invite you to look at yourself and the life that you're in and understand that you have the potential to outstanding, unsurpassed success in this world. And to know that this is not a magic bullet, that there is a way for you, for me, for everyone out there to understand how to tap into it. And so today, Alan is joining us to talk with us about many, many things, but I want to introduce you to his book, Surrounded by Geniuses, 10 Journeys to the Future of Customer and Business Success. And beyond that, we're going to have a great time. Alan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Beth. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I've got to tell you that, you know, in looking at your book and looking at what you've put out, I cannot help but think about how what you've outlined in this book translates, transfers to how we operate in our lives every day, whether it's in the work, in business, or sitting here listening to the show thinking, I've got like an incredible idea, and I just don't know how to take it out there. I mean, when you wrote this book, did you have any idea it would have a crossover effect?
Well, I appreciate the fact that you mentioned that, because I was hoping, because there are a bunch of aspects of my life in which these ideas really matter. In addition to kind of running our consulting company and working with companies and nonprofit organizations and governments to help them to unlock genius in all of the people who work there, I also started and have run for the last 7 years a nonprofit organization in the lowest income schools in our area. That's really about trying to inspire kids to unlock the genius that's in themselves, and by bringing people from the community in to tell the kids that they really matter and help to bring out the genius. So I see it in the kind of work we do in schools, and I also see it in any time that somebody really does something in which what they're doing really matters to them, and in which they're determined to do better at something that matters, and determined to kind of unlock their ability to come up with brilliant solutions or ways of doing things, whether they're in a kind of a personal situation or a social or civic situation or in the workplace. and determined to figure out how to get their colleagues to also be brilliant with them. So I'd like to think that people will see the ideas in the book and see that they really relate to what it takes for us as humans to be as kind of brilliant and reach our potential as possible.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm going to share with our listeners today, I'm going to share some of the contents of the book, because I'll tell you what captivated and got my attention is how you defined each chapter, so to speak, or each section of the book. And one of the things I want to let everybody know is that you're going to be given a lot of information during today's show. This is a straight hour of conversation between myself and the author of Surrounded by Geniuses, Alan Gregerman. He's joining me here today. And we're going to learn how to explore successful ideas so that everybody out there understands that regardless of where you are right now, you have an innate ability to know that you can live the life that you desire. This is not a joke. It's really not a cosmic caricature of our lives. This is really an invitation for everybody out there to take their game up a bit and to know that some days you have everything inside you right now. You don't necessarily have to look to others to find that out. We are really catalysts for you. You know, Alan, I wanted to ask you a question that I've asked many, many people that I've interviewed. And the question, you're a successful man. You are like what many people would say at the top of the game. And I've got to ask you this. Given all that you've done and all that you are, what are some of the challenges, what are some of the obstacles that you personally have had to overcome to bring you to this very moment?
Well, I think when I look at kind of the biggest challenges I've faced,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I spend my time doing is trying to get people to see ideas that maybe are different than what the mainstream is. And let me give you kind of a sense of what I mean here.
Okay.
When we think about organizations and we think about innovation, we've been sold really the notion that there are a limited number of absolutely kind of brilliant creative people in the world, and those are the ones that start Apple Computer. They're the Einsteins of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're the folks who absolutely we have to count on if we're ever as organizations going to make something happen. And I think all of the work that I've done over the last 25 years has really been to get people to understand that that's the wrong equation, that all of us have a compellingly unique ability to be brilliant in things that matter to us, but our challenge is to figure out what's the song in us and then how to make it come out in ways that make a difference. And so that's a tough sell, actually, in the world of corporations, because remember, corporations are kind of structures that are a pyramid in which the supposedly brilliant people rise to the top, and they rise to the top by taking credit for the work of the clever people beneath them. And so my struggle has been to get organizations to look at themselves really kind of from the bottom up and to think of themselves as places that really are filled with potential geniuses and that we can only be brilliant if we unlock the talent in all of our people as opposed to believing just a few people are really talented. So that's the first thing. So I've had trouble at times selling ideas to organizations about a whole different way of behaving than they're used to behaving. And so it's been really, I think, a challenge at times wondering whether or not I was the only person kind of out in the wilderness kind of trying to get some traction with these ideas and finding the really that the folks who kind of control organizations large and small were not open to kind of this notion. So that's a challenge. The second challenge that I'm sure a lot of your listeners face is anytime you want to do something kind of entrepreneurial that's new and a bit different, that's not easy to do. If it was easy to do, everybody would do it. And yet if you're kind of disciplined and focused and you're able to roll with the punches and realize that a setback is just a way for you to learn to be smarter about what you want to do, then you have a better chance of making that happen. So I think that's kind of a key challenge I face. Along the way, I've had a few other challenges. I mean, I've had actually 4 near-death experiences. The most epic one being when my heart kind of stopped working. Fortunately, I was able to be rushed to a hospital in which after a 10-hour surgery in which they removed my heart and rebuilt it, I was set to go off into the wilderness again. So I think at those times, you really come to kind of think about the world a little bit differently. And when you see how vulnerable you are, then you get to be quite passionate about the fact that, you know, I really have something that I need to accomplish here, and I'm going to be determined even more so than ever to make it happen. So I think of those things. But then the other things are just the part of kind of living and kind of growing. And my view is, you know, I don't want to peak too soon. I've got a lot of learning to do, so hopefully over time I continue, if I face all these challenges, to kind of deliver more value to the people that I'm committed to trying to serve.
You know, Alan, thank you so much for sharing that, because, I mean, I think we can all relate to, you know, the challenges that, we come up against. As a matter of fact, the first show I ever did on radio talked about the challenges that we have in life and overcoming them. And you know, the challenges from your perspective, I mean, is it that some of us get dealt a better deck of cards, a better hand of cards than others? Or is there something that we learn, regardless of the deck of cards, the hand of cards that we've been dealt?
I think you're probably right. It's, I think, a combination of a couple of things. But I think it's, we're all dealt kind of different decks of hands, but we can all turn each of those hands into a winning hand.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if we kind of understand what it takes to do something that's remarkable, and if we look at ourselves and figure out what's the magic in ourselves, and commit to figuring out how to invest in that and develop that. And some of the magic in ourselves is stuff that we were born absolutely naturally with. When I think about kind of the main idea, or one of the two main ideas in Surrounded by Geniuses, what I always focus on, and I love your listeners to think about, is the most fundamental skill or gift that any one of us has, from my perspective as somebody who spends time thinking about innovation, is an innate gift of curiosity. An ability, no matter what situation we're in, to look at the world around us with a curiosity that within it are some possibilities that could really make a difference in our lives and what we're trying to accomplish. That's a gift we're all born with, but the reality is over time, as we go through school and then as we go into the workplace, it's literally sucked out of us because our culture doesn't truly value curiosity on the part of adults. It at times values entrepreneurs, but more importantly for most of us, it says this is the way we do things here, so kind of get with the program. And then once we get with the program, we get a little bit stale about what we could do or what's possible or how we can really kind of grow and see the world differently. So I think the challenge for all of us is to never lose our sense of curiosity about what's possible, to question a lot of things, to look at things with open eyes, to believe that there are things out there in a different part of the world or a different aspect of life or in the knowledge of people who are very different than us that can be combined with what we know to do absolutely brilliant things and truly make a difference. So I think that's the first thing I'd love people to think about. The second thing is I believe everybody has the potential, whether they do it in the world of work or whether they do it in the world of volunteering or whether they do it in their own family or their personal life, to make a compelling difference in the lives of somebody, and that our challenge is to use that curiosity to either serve the needs of customers in a compelling way or family in a compelling way or a community that matters to us.
You know, Alan, you know, part of what you talk about is compelling value in the book. And I was really struck by you know, spending some time to think about what it means to deliver compelling value. And for me, as I looked at that, and I looked at it in terms of, yes, in the business place, every day, in building business and organizations, I also looked at it from a different point of view. Here you are, you talked about you're also the founder of a nonprofit. I mean, what if every day, regardless of where we worked or what we did, we opened our eyes up for that day with the idea that we were going to deliver compelling value? Is that something that, am I being a little idealistic here?
No, I think you're on to something that's very important, and I'd love your listeners to kind of think about and kind of develop the idea that you're thinking about. We can decide to wake up each day and kind of get through the day,
mm-hmm.
or we can decide to wake up each day and in something that matters to us, commit to making a difference. And if we decide to commit to making a difference and commit to delivering compelling value, then we're going to approach the day very, very differently. Then we're going to say to ourselves, let's look at the things that are on our plate and figure out the most important ones and figure out if there's a far better way to do something than the way we've always done it before. Whether that's in our personal relationships, whether that's in the world of kind of volunteering, which is a world that's near and dear to my heart, when I think about the days that I go in and I have the privilege of kind of tutoring kids who see me as somebody who comes in and actually cares about them and believes in their potential, then my challenge is to say that I commit to you that I'm going to do whatever I can in my power to make a difference in your life, to help you to see the potential in you, and I'm going to try and get better and better at that every single time I do it. Or whether I go to work and I have a challenge that involves a customer, and I say to myself, I have the ability, working with that customer, to rethink the way we serve them and to figure out what would matter more to them, whether it means being faster, whether it means being more responsive, whether it means delivering a product or service that I could truly guarantee, whether it means helping them to anticipate their needs so that problems don't occur. So in every aspect of our life, I think we have the choice of waking up and saying exactly what you've just mentioned, and that is, I can deliver compelling value by looking at what I'm doing differently and figuring out ways in which I could do it that matter more to myself or those I serve.
Thank you, Alan. I want to remind everyone that if you're just tuning in and you just flipped on that dial, you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. I'm your host, Dr. Pat Basile. My guest today is Alan Gregerman. And what I want to say about Alan is he's created an incredible book, Surrounded by Geniuses. And if you want to follow along with us, if you want to check out Alan, go to his website as you're listening. Check it out, alangregerman.com. And take a look at what we're talking about. The book is Surrounded by Geniuses, and we're talking about that from many, many different perspectives. And, Alan, one of the things that I wanted to address is, one of my favorite sayings, and for many of my listeners who listen to the show, they hear me talk about failure and talk about this idea that you bring up. What if we believed that failure was not an option? What if we believed that failure was not an option? I have to say it twice just to make sure that I'm getting it at the cellular level of my body. I mean, what is life like, Alan, from your perspective, if we have that thought going on?
Well, I think, and that's the place that, you know, a lot of really separates an awful lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who succeed do exactly what you say. They realize that it's not going to be easy to make things that really matter happen in a brilliant way, but the challenge that we face is to figure out how to be successful in a way that matters. And the way I like to think about it is, hey, if you were to imagine, and it's a great thing for your kind of listeners to do sometime, is sometime when you have a few free moments on an afternoon, walk by a playground in your community where there are a lot of young kids playing. And if you look closely, you're going to see something that's quite remarkable, and that is you're going to see the youngest kids who have not quite mastered things that really matter to them, like climbing to the top of the jungle gym. They're going to be looking at the monkey bars, and they're going to be looking at the bigger kids at the top, and they're going to be saying to themselves, I've got to get to the top of the monkey bars. I've got to do it because that's what it means to be a kid, and that's what it means to be kind of an older kid, to show myself I'm growing and developing. And so they're going to look at the other kids, and then they're going to try and do it. And quite likely, they're going to start to climb up, and then they're going to fall down. And if an adult had that experience often, decided to climb up on something that was a challenge and fell down, half of the adults in the world would say, you know, this is just too hard. Let's go to Starbucks instead of doing it.
You know, it's funny that you're talking about this, Alan, because, you know, you just brought me back to my childhood. I grew up in New York City. So I grew up in the concrete playground with the monkey bars. And I so relate to what you just said. And I hadn't really thought about it like that. Because I often wonder what keeps me going some days. And now that you've talked about that, you know, there were days as a young kid, and I was a lot smaller than a lot of the other kids. And, you know, so just reaching up to the monkey bar seemed like mission impossible. But there is an aspect of who we are that allows us to keep pushing on. What happens between the ages of being that young kid that could hardly reach that bar of the monkey bar with just fearless determination to us as we get older that says, okay, you know what, game over, I'm going to Starbucks or who knows, Baskin Robbins.
Well, I think what happens is, you know, the young kids look at a playground full of kids and say to themselves, I can figure out how to do that. I'm as good as all of those other kids. I mm-hmm. have within me the ability to do that. That's an essential part of who I am as a child who's growing and developing. I think, unfortunately, for an awful lot of adults, and it happens as you get older as a child and then go through school and then kind of get into the workplace, I think what happens is we've convinced an awful lot of people that we've made some decisions as organizations or as societies about kind of how to sort them out, and that we've put kind of people in buckets and told people that your bucket kind of identifies how much potential you have and how high up in the monkey bars you're going to go. And so I think some people start to buy that, and they start to get involved in kind of organizations and then possibly even making some of their own career moves that lock them into a place in which they see the possibility of failure as real. I mean, you got to also realize that we're in an economy in which an awful lot of people, through no fault of their own, I don't want to say fail, but have a setback. I mean, mm-hmm. we just read about the fact that Chrysler is going to lay off another 12,000 people.
Right.
Is it the fault of the line workers at Chrysler, many of whom who have made brilliant suggestions about how to improve the performance of the company? Is it their fault that they're going to lose their job? So should they look at themselves and say, I've failed? Or is it that they're in a circumstance in which now they've got to figure out some other place to be successful, in a place that will really appreciate the value that they offer? But I think the other thing that I'd like to kind of add to the mix is the notion that it's actually okay to fail in things that really matter if we use that failure as a way to figure out how to do it. That failure is just a temporary step on the way to getting it right, that we step back, we fall off the monkey bars, but as opposed to going to Starbucks, we get up, dust ourselves off, figure out why we fell and why we didn't hold on in the right way, then get up and continue to do it till we get to the top. Now, people are more highly motivated, I believe, if you can make a connection for them between what they're doing and the fact that it really matters. If over time I go to work and I don't see a connection between what I'm doing and really making a difference in the lives of people that matter to me, then it's very hard for me to get motivated when it's tough to be brilliant. But if I believe that what I do truly matters, I'm going to do whatever it takes to learn the skills, master the techniques, engage the world in a way that I'm going to get it right. Because now too much is riding on me. Because if I don't figure out how to be brilliant here, then folks who rely on me, customers, patients in hospitals, whatever the case is, kids in an after-school program, they don't get what they deserve, and I'm not willing to take that on. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to be relevant to them so it matters.
You know, Alan, I mean, so much of this is interesting to explore in how we step into the world on a day-to-day basis. You know, when I introduced you, I barely touched the surface of all that you are, all that you've achieved. And yet, I didn't mention the fact that, you know, you've done so many things in your life, including, I think I read, you were a mechanic in a subway.
I was a subway mechanic for BART, the subway in San Francisco.
Right. And now you're one of the most sought-after consultants in the world in helping people understand their brilliance and magnificence. And so sometimes my listeners say to me, you know, you bring on some of the most incredible people. I mean, these folks have got to represent the 1% in the world. And I say, no, go to their websites and take a look at where these folks have been. You were a mechanic in the BART in the subway, and I sold hot dogs from a hot dog cart.
And I've got to believe that something about that experience gave you part of the way that you, in such a kind of positive and inspiring way, look at the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would be the first to say that. And, you know, when you describe this sort of idea of sort of growing up and having this, what I call, is really this magnificence, this innocence, and being able to stand there at a hot dog cart to know what everybody's order was, to greet each person with a smile, to have a great conversation and get them in and out within 60 seconds, and to be able to do that every day. And I didn't realize it until I started to talk about it on my radio show one day, that part of what I learned in the short time I had that job, I forgot for a number of years, but I didn't really. And so how can we remind ourselves, how can we remember that truly we are brilliant and truly that being surrounded by geniuses isn't necessarily everybody else. We're referring to ourselves.
And I'd like to challenge all the listeners to think about the fact that at some point, if they're honest about looking at kind of what they've been doing through the course of their life, way more than one time, they're going to be able to look back and see situations in which they did something that truly was brilliant for the role that they were in.
Mm-hmm.
We have the ability to do that. We often kind of sell ourselves short. We often think that our brilliance does not stack up with kind of the great figures that we read about in books. But, you know, it's really about everyday genius. Let me give you a kind of a wonderful example, because it was kind of an everyday genius that really kind of spurred one of the kind of great kind of business success stories today. I'm sure most of your listeners now are familiar in some way with a company called Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Mm-hmm.
And Enterprise Rent-A-Car was a small rent-a-car company, hardly on the radar screen of the companies like Hertz and Avis and National and all those folks. They were trying to figure out, I think, what they could do that would be different, that mattered, in ways that would help them to grow their business. But, you know, in the 1970s, they hadn't figured out something that would help them to be other than a small company. Well, the manager of their place, so we're not talking about a senior executive, but the manager of their location in Orlando, Florida, one day decided to try something. And that idea was, how can we be more convenient or more helpful to the customers we serve? And came up with the idea that he would personally offer to pick the people up who were going to rent a car, because he knew for a lot of them they didn't have access to their own transportation, or their car was in the shop, or whatever the case. And so he said to them, what's different about us is we're going to not inconvenience you. We're going to be the most convenient folks. We're going to pick you up and bring you here and give you a car, and then when you're done, we're going to take you home. That idea became the fundamental idea at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Their slogan now is, at Enterprise, we pick you up. And I mention that because today, 2007, Enterprise Rent-A-Car is now by far the largest rent-a-car company in North America. Bigger than Hertz, bigger than Avis, bigger than National. And it wasn't the head, the CEO of this company, that was the brilliant genius. It was a regular person like us, who happened to be working someplace near customers and decided, just like you might have decided, at the hot dog stand, I'm going to figure out how to deliver the best hot dog faster because I realize these people are busy people. He decided, I'm going to figure out how to make a difference in their lives. That created the impetus for what is now, I don't know, a $10 billion company?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a surprise to me, Alan, and it may be a surprise to our listeners, but I want to echo what you're talking about regarding Enterprise. And before I do that, I want to mention to everyone that you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. I'm your host, Dr. Pat Basile. I'm joined here today by Alan Gregerman, who has created just an incredible book, Surrounded by Geniuses. If you want to find out more about Alan or get a copy of the book, I want you to go to his website, alangregerman.com. Or you can go to thedrpatshow.com, and we've got a link right there for you to find out more about Alan. But it's funny, Alan, that you mention Enterprise, because I think I've shared this story once before. When 9/11 happened, I happened to be in California, in San Francisco area in California with my best friend, and we were there for an event. And so we were in San Francisco trying to, at the moment, we were scheduled to fly out and go back home. And, of course, no one could fly on that day. But then we decided, well, why don't we get a rent-a-car and let's just drive up from San Francisco to Seattle. Beautiful ride. Let's just do that. And it'll give us some time to reflect because both of us were from New York. And so that's what we wanted to do. When we went to go get a rent-a-car, let me tell you what the experience was. Every rent-a-car company had raised the prices of their cars. And many of them did not allow you to take a car out of state and do a one-way distribution. Every rent-a-car company except one, Enterprise.
Interesting.
And we were stunned. We were able to get a car from Enterprise. Not only did we get the car and were able to take it one way, but they had reduced their prices. So there's something in what we're talking about that for me, if I were to take it even to a metaphysical level, you know, we're talking about an energy, an acceptance of that idea, which then became the backbone for the culture of that organization that didn't demonstrate through a one-time event. I mean, look at what I'm talking about. I'm just talking, and you and I didn't plan this.
Interesting. No, right?
You're right. No, we didn't plan this. But to think about a company where that idea was born and how that organization has grown, and to see that the way that they value people was demonstrated, not just to me, it was everyone at that particular point in time that was trying to get home. They stepped up to the plate and said, not only are we going to give you a car, they gave us a great car, by the way,
okay.
Not only are we going to give you this car, we're going to give you a reduced rate, and don't worry about it, you can take it one way.
No, and I think what you're saying, that's a wonderful story, is the notion that if it's really part of kind of the ethic of a culture or an organization or an individual, that the folks that they choose to serve really matter, that they're continuing to figure out how to make a difference, then what you've suggested is, as opposed to taking advantage of people for a short-term gain, their idea is to make it easier in every respect for somebody to do what they need to do and to really support them and deliver value that matters. So that's wonderful. So I'll keep renting from them then. I've got another reason now to rent.
Well, and, you know, part of what we're talking about is how we can show up as the best person that we can be in our lives. You know, I think part of the question after I read your book and I looked at some of the incredible things that you've put in here, I mean, I was so struck by the section you put in on the power of a promise. And of course, I would be, because I spent, you know, both my graduate and doctoral work on studying psychological contract violation, which is, you know, reneging on a promise.
Right.
And so I was struck by the power of a promise in many, many ways, and I wanted you to talk about this, because from an employee point of view these days, it seems like folks are feeling, you know, we're not sure we can trust. We're not sure, you know, if today's promise is going to carry forth. I did a show earlier this month, and actually I think it was October, where I did a show where someone called in and said, you're not going to believe this. I was with a company 30 years, and now all of my health benefits are gone. I mean, is there a lesson to learn in the way we treat employees so that our employees know the value of a promise when that translates to our customers?
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, and I think we're in a really tricky time mm-hmm. in the kind of world of work, because mm-hmm. I think what's happened is this bond between employee and organization has really eroded.
Mm-hmm.
Employees see that organizations, for the most part, though there's some wonderful organizations out there, but they see for the most part that organizations aren't loyal to them, that they're driven by the bottom line, that folks who have worked hard for 30 years, as you suggest, might not have a place pretty soon if we can't meet our numbers or if we haven't figured out how to gauge the marketplace. And then at the same time, we see employees who now are saying, well, there's no point in being particularly loyal to a company. So it's kind of a catch-22
mm-hmm.
because we see a whole new generation of employees who say, you know, as soon as I get a better offer, I'm out of here.
Right.
So it's hard for employers and employees to understand in this world. But I think part of what we find in some of the best companies is that they're not willing to erode that bond with employees, because they know that if they create a place that's a safe place where employees don't have to every day wonder whether the axe is going to fall, that those employees are more likely to do whatever it takes to help that company to be successful. And so that's what I think listeners who are thinking about, am I in the right organization, or as I'm thinking about maybe a new job or changing organization, ought to look to see whether they're talking with companies that have proven to the folks who are already there that they matter, and that will do whatever it takes to support your ability to be brilliant, because your brilliance is what's going to continue to allow us to grow and be valuable. But that's a huge challenge. Now, you think about it as it relates to customers, and the story that mm-hmm. kind of you mentioned is a kind of wonderful story, and I think most of your listeners will relate to it, because there's a chapter in the book in which I talk about the life of a remarkable guy named Leonwood Bean. And now we know the reason why he probably called himself LL. And so here was a guy who ran his family dry goods store, but then decided that he would create a product. And he created a product which was an insulated kind of hunting and fishing boot. But he created that because he liked to go hunting and fishing, and he always caught cold and always kind of found that his feet got wet. But be that as it may, he created this product and then liked the product so much he decided to sell it to other people. So he manufactured 100 pairs of these boots, sold them to 100 people, and within a month, 90 of the pairs of boots fell apart. Now, a lot of companies, when we look at companies out there today, we're shocked. We go to an electronics store, we buy an expensive TV, and they tell us it has a 90-day warranty.
Right.
You know, so we're really excited about it. Now, I have a 25-year-old Zenith TV, you know, in our living room, and it's still working. But today, they're only willing to give me a 90-day warranty. So I say to myself, they really stand behind their product, don't they? You know, and so, but he said, you know, and so these shoes fell apart, and he felt so badly that he went back to all these people and said, look, I'm going to redesign these shoes, and I'll get back to you. And then he redesigned them, got back to them, and said to them, look, I apologize for what happened. I want you to be satisfied. I believe this is a good product, so I'm going to give you the new version of it. And here's my promise to you. If at any moment in the life of this shoe you could wear it for a day, a month, a year, 5 years, or 10 years, you don't, as the customer, believe that it delivers value commensurate with what you paid, send it back to me, and I will give you your money back, no questions asked, or give you another pair. What he had thought about that companies today don't think about is that the customer ought to decide whether they're satisfied, not the company deciding whether or not they've given you enough value. So a customer would say, no, 90 days is really not enough, you know, for a $1,000 television set. I think that's not really fair. $1,000 is a lot of money to me. So now at L.L. Bean, let's imagine in the extreme, because they sell all kinds of products. They sell fishing gear, they sell clothing, they sell kayaks. But let's imagine that you bought an umbrella 10 years ago from L.L. Bean, and you call them and you say, you know, I got this umbrella from you, and you know it broke. You know, and in a typical company, the person on the other line would say, are you the biggest moron in the world? You ought to be grateful your umbrella lasted 10 years. But at L.L. Bean, they say, no, we apologize for the umbrella breaking. If you don't feel that 10 years is reasonable, just tell us the style and the color you got, and we'll send you another one, no questions asked, because you matter. Now, having said that, some of your listeners would say, well, God, wouldn't these guys go out of business? No, because they trust people to be reasonable. And if you trust the customer to be reasonable, then why wouldn't you guarantee that they're satisfied with what you do? I should also note L.L. Bean is a $2 billion company today,
mm-hmm.
and I would argue one of the most kind of cherished brands in America. And it's tied to this unconditional guarantee of satisfaction. Now, we ought to think about that in the businesses or organizations we're in. How do we guarantee what we do? And we ought to guarantee the promise that you started, you know, this kind of wonderful line of questioning about. We ought to guarantee that the promise we make in all aspects of our life, to ourselves, to those we care about, to those that we choose to serve in a social or civic or kind of church or synagogue environment, to wherever we choose to do something to try and matter to somebody, that we make a promise that we'll do whatever it takes to guarantee that we've delivered what we say we will.
You know, Alan, what you're talking about brings me to a debate, let's call it, that I got into on the radio not too long ago. Let's not call it a debate, but a difference of opinion between myself and Carolyn Mace. And the difference of opinion had to do with whether we believe from a really general, and I'm generalizing perspective of the fact that in this country we have gotten to a place of complacency where we're not only do we not care about things in the world, but we don't care enough about ourselves to really speak our voice, or is it that we are at a place where our priorities have shifted? And so, you know, we're talking about shifting priorities both on an individual basis in the workplace. You know, the question is, did we make a promise to ourselves to be mediocre? I mean, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
Right. No, I do.
I don't know that I woke up one day and said, I think I'm going to be mediocre, but I can point to points in my life where, you know, I definitely was snoozing.
Right. Well, but we're allowed to, as long as over the long term we commit to making use of that that's in us that potentially is magic and can make a difference, I believe. I mean, the part of the equation that I always want to add, and I realize it's not always right for everybody, but for me it is, did I commit to making a difference in the lives of others? Did I commit to trying to make the world a better place? Did I figure out kind of what talents I had and then kind of really bring them to life with a greater sense of curiosity, which is a talent we all have, in figuring out how to do something that truly benefited somebody beyond me? And so we're allowed at times, you know, I can't think of anybody that has been absolutely focused and absolutely brilliant and absolutely used every minute they were given to be remarkable all the time. That would be exhausting, I think. You know, and so I think it's fair to think that there are times when we're not doing as much as maybe we could, but maybe those are times in which we're kind of storing up energy or getting ourselves into a place where we suddenly can kick ourselves and say, nope, I'm not making the most of what I ought to be doing. Now's the time for me to kind of get it in gear.
And, you know, that leads me to something you also talk about in the book, and I don't remember the detail of it, but there is a place in the book where you say, take your own journey. And I wanted to ask you, from your perspective in your own life, you know, how did you come to truly know the meaning of the statement, take your own journey? And, you know, what happens when we look at the journey and get to that place where we stop and say, boy, I wish I could have done it differently?
Well, I hope in a way we never come to a point where we spend so much time thinking about, I wish I could have done it differently, because I still think we always can take the next journey and continue to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But let me kind of give you a sense. I mean, one of the great advantages I have, which was kind of a little bit of a kind of quirk of fate, but a bunch of things are kind of quirk of fate.
Oh, yeah.
Is that I actually, to the great ridicule of all of my colleagues in college, ended up studying geography as my field of study. You know, and friends would joke about the fact, oh, Alan studies geography, he must know all the state capitals. And yet what I tried to get them to understand is the reason that I studied geography and loved it was because geography was about places and about journeys and about discovering other people in other parts of the world, even if they're just a neighborhood away from us, who have different ways of looking at the world and different insight and kind of different magic to share. And so I've spent so much of my life kind of studying about kind of places, and then I've been fortunate to be able to travel a lot. And when I travel to kind of see in the world, kind of my eyes open wide to kind of remarkable things in all different parts of the world and all different communities in America, in which people have figured out things that I never ever had kind of taken the time or ever really gotten to know. And so what I think I always discovered was the more we commit to taking a journey to places that are different than the comfortable and familiar, the more likely we are to have a broader view of what's possible and a broader set of skills we can apply to doing the things that we really believe are important. So in that respect, I kind of have thought about kind of work in my career as a journey. The other thing is, when I think about the work I do as a consultant and now as an author, the reality is that if I don't continue to have kind of new ideas or new perspectives to bring to the readers or to bring to my customers, I'm no longer relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to gain new perspectives, I've got to regularly be out on a journey to learn and discover and figure out new ways to do things and new things to know. So I have to truly kind of understand that. The other thing that matters to me as well is you read about an awful lot of people who, you know, create a great company at the age of 28 or 30 or 40. Now we see these kind of internet entrepreneurs who are like 24 or 25 and they're billionaires. You know, and you even see in interviews and they say, gee, I've got all this money. What am I going to do next?
Right.
And so they're in a world in which they've kind of peaked too soon. I mean, they're at a pretty tall mountain, but they've kind of peaked too soon. My view is that you're on a journey in life to deliver value and make a difference, and hopefully even at times to figure out how to repair the world in some way. And you have to find your part of that. And that's not something that you want to give up on, because I believe as long as you've got kind of the energy that there's work to be done. I mean, there are no shortage of challenges in the world. There are no shortage of people who couldn't benefit from folks with expertise and talent kind of caring about and trying to make a difference in their lives. And so I believe that's a journey that we can't ever kind of stop. And we can take kind of breaks, you know, and it's good to take a vacation and kind of re-energize or just sit and read a book. But overall, I have this notion of where I want to get to in making a difference, and that I want to keep doing things that give me some chance to get close to it while I'm still around.
And part of what you're saying and what I hear you say, I so relate to that. And yet, I know many people have gone through the lifetime of being that youngster, being that person, as you say, being in that sandbox, and knowing from that place, that point of view, that as we move out into the world, the sandbox mentality, that smile, that energy, that vibration of playing in a sandbox can sometimes be difficult, especially in places and organizations. But one of the things that I was struck by in the book that you say, and what a great way for us to really bring this conversation to the end of this level at least, is this idea of 24/7. You mentioned it in the book. I mean, it's everywhere. 24/7. It is. It is one of the hottest phases in the book, in the world today. Not only in business, but it's 24/7. You hear housewives using the phrase. But what you invite us to do, you invite us to be brilliant 24/7. And the fact that we are is the fact that it really does matter. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, especially for folks that are listening today and can hardly crack a smile on their face. You know, brilliance, Alan, again, this is something that you talk about as being readily available for every one of us.
Well, I think, and you know, there's a quote, and I'm trying to remember who said this quote, but opportunity really presents itself, and I'm paraphrasing it poorly, but the secret to success in life is being ready when opportunity presents itself. So I like to think about being ready when there's a chance to make a difference. Chances to make a difference don't just happen kind of between 8 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Somebody who needs us isn't necessarily going to cross our path or tap us on the shoulder or knock on our door, you know, just between the hours that it's convenient, or what I like to say, kind of banker's hours. And so imagine, as you say, we're bombarded with 24/7. You know, McDonald's says it's open 24/7. Pizza delivery's open 24/7. We can get technical support, they claim, from all of these companies that help us 24/7. But for all of your listeners who've ever tried to get technical support from companies like Dell or Comcast or some of my other favorite companies, hopefully they're not sponsors of your show, you know, and found the frustration of being stuck on hold, you know, for 40 minutes while you get these tape messages that say, thank you for calling Dell's award-winning customer support. And I say, God, imagine what awards they'd win if they actually supported the customer. And so, so we hear it all the time, and everybody thinks it's a great competitive advantage to say, oh, we're 24/7, we're brilliant 24/7, we can do whatever it takes. Well, we're in a global economy in which people around the world are working all the time. And so somewhere in the world, somebody needs you 24/7. So I decided to explore that idea and to figure out if, in fact, there were people who actually claimed that they were brilliant 24/7 and actually really proved it. And I found a remarkable place in Baltimore, Maryland, called the R. Adams Colley Shock Trauma Center. And it turns out to be the only dedicated shock trauma hospital in America. Now, what's remarkable about these people is the only patients that they take care of are people who have been in serious accidents and had serious trauma. Car accidents, gunshot wounds, being stabbed, industrial accidents, recreational accidents. So these are people who literally are on the verge of death. Last year, 7,700 people on the verge of death either arrived at the heliport on the roof or came in through an ambulance to the emergency room. 7,700 people who by rights could have died, 97% of them ended up, after treatment there and then some rehabilitation depending on their case, going back to leading their normal lives in a world where at least half of them probably should have died. Now, how can these people save the lives of people who are about to die 97% of the time when a company like Dell can't even answer a simple customer question at all hours of the day? So that was a shocking thing for me to think about. And so when I hung out with them for 24 hours, what I realized was that they were kind of remarkable people in a few ways. first is they were remarkable at figuring out how to get these critically injured people to the hospital within an hour, because we knew with a trauma patient that there was a critical hour in which they had to get care, otherwise their likelihood of surviving was very small. But secondly, they committed that at 24/7, at all hours of the day, in two 12-hour shifts, they would have on staff at the hospital, not waiting on call somewhere in their own home, not at a restaurant having dinner with their family, but at the hospital 24/7, every type of expertise that they ever had needed to save a person's life. And they committed to doing that so that they stood ready at any moment, because injuries actually happen more often late at night when people have been drinking in their cars, or at kind of early in the morning in industrial situations. They committed to being brilliant all the time. And if they could do it when they were saving lives, and the rest of us generally aren't saving lives, we could have the smile you're suggesting and a helping hand and an ability to make a difference in somebody's life 24/7 by simply tweaking our attitude. And then the few hours of the day when we don't have the energy to make a difference, we put up a shingle that says, you know, I'm kind of tired, I'm recharging so I can be brilliant and make a difference in people's lives. So it struck me we have the ability to do that. It's just whether we believe that what we can do really matters, and whether we're committed to figuring out how to find a place within ourselves in which we use our talent to make a difference in somebody else's life. And if we do that, we have a very different perspective. Now, you can't do it 168 hours a week. Is that how many hours? Or even 24 hours a day. But we can do it enough of the time to matter if we change our perspective.
And that's what you talk about in the book so brilliantly, in terms of how we can step up to the, and this is the way I like to think about it. I mean, we're at choice every minute of every day. I mean, I believe we are. And we get to choose whether we're going to flip that switch on and, as you said, either put on a smile, or we're going to take a nap, re-energize, rejuvenate, and come back out of the gate. And yet, at different times, we hear, I don't really have a choice. I'm not really at choice now. Somebody else is running my life. How can we, in closing today, how can we talk to folks and have them understand that choice is such a brilliant freedom to have?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, we don't get to make all the shots in life. I mean,
no.
We don't run everything. We're not the boss of everything. But that's not the kind of gut issue that we all face. Well, the issue we face is, can we put ourselves in a place where we can make a difference? And can we, when the opportunity presents itself for us to figure out how to do better, the things that really matter, are we willing to step up and take initiative? And so I think what we want to be doing is developing our skills, keeping our eyes open, being curious, encountering the world around us, looking at folks like L.L. Bean, looking at folks in other walks of life who truly have figured out kind of how to make a difference, thinking about kind of guarantees, thinking about 24/7, what people do in the most amazing kind of emergency rooms and trauma centers, thinking about kind of all those places in the world around us in which folks can give us clues about how to get energized, how to develop a new perspective, and how to take that perspective when the opportunity presents itself and do something different and unique that really matters. And I think the thing that I truly want everybody to realize is that we can't ever have an attitude that we don't have the potential to be brilliant, because I've spent 25 years of my life working in organizations in which I have seen people at every single level of an organization figure out how to do something brilliant. And the folks that figure it out best are the ones who pay attention to the customers, pay attention to the kind of marketplace, and think about what's missing there and how I can do something that truly is different, how I can pick people up, you know, and that would matter to them, how I can be the person at the hot dog stand who creates a compelling experience in which, even if it's only 5 minutes of somebody's life, that's a memorable part of their life that helps them to get along with and be more successful in their day. So I think we've got to just kind of look at the world in a very different way. First, to acknowledge that I can make a difference. Second, that I ought to be focused on the things that matter. And if I'm in an organization, or I'd even argue, you know, in a volunteer situation or a relationship in which I can't do something that matters, I ought to be looking for a different situation to be in. But then that I have now the raw material, and that's curiosity, that allows me to look at the world, figure out brilliant kind of ideas and insight, apply them to what I'm trying to do, and truly make a difference. I'm not talking about being Einstein, but I don't think we all want to be Einstein. We all want to simply do something that truly matters in a way that's different than anybody else ever has. And I think we all have the ability to do it. I've rarely met a person who ever gave me some sense they didn't have the ability to do something brilliant.
And Alan, I want to thank you for sharing that, because it is a reminder to everyone listening to the show today that this show and my conversation with my guest today, the author of Surrounded, I wanted to make Surrounded by Geniuses, I wanted to make sure everybody has Alan Gregerman's website, which is www.alangregerman.com, and you'll be able to find many things on this website, including the book Surrounded by Geniuses. And, you know, Alan, if there's one thing that I heard you say today, and I hope our listeners hear it, because some people believe that these are times where folks are longing to be inspired. And certainly what you've been able to do today in joining me on the show is give people that spark, that level of inspiration, so that they can realize that regardless of where they are in their lives, there is brilliance within them. And what an incredible gift. Alan, as we wrap this up, I'd love to ask you for your personal message for our listeners today.
Well, first, let me thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show. You have a wonderful show. I mean, you raise kind of ideas and engage people in a way that I think is really very, very powerful to your listeners, so I truly appreciate the chance to be on. I'd like people to think about the kind of two fundamental ideas that I've been wrestling with for the longest time, and that is that we have the ability to be remarkable, that we have the ability to kind of use our curiosity to unlock value and do things in ways that really matter. So I'd like people to think about that. And then I'd like them to think about that with all the depressing news that they hear around them, literally the world is filled with kind of inspiration and kind of magic and brilliant ideas and brilliant creations, and they can be a spark for us figuring out how to be remarkable. We can look around at the kind of magic of the simple conversation that Girl Scouts bring when they knock on our door in just a month or two selling Girl Scout cookies, and think about how kind of these wonderful kind of young kind of women-to-be really strike at the heart of what it means to be a neighbor, and of course they sell Thin Mints as well, which are one of my favorites, but really kind of give us a sign of what it means to have meaningful kind of conversations and to engage people in meaningful ways. We can think about the beauty of animals like cheetahs, the world's fastest creatures, and figure out why they're so fast and think about if there are things in our life or our organizations that require being fast, maybe they're the best inspiration for us, and maybe just the joy of kind of studying them or seeing a movie about them might spark us to think that those are magical creatures. We can have fun by thinking that there are cool things in the world that could give us great ideas. I love to think about the notion of Spider-Man, who's a superhero who has the amazing ability to anticipate danger, and what if we could learn from him how to anticipate danger in our own lives or the lives of our customers, and could jump in there, not necessarily wearing a cool spandex costume, but could jump in there and make a difference. So inspiration is in all aspects of our life, whether it's the movie theater or nature or a walk in our neighborhood or a great museum. And if we can combine our curiosity with a world that surrounds us with kind of brilliant ideas, even with all of its challenges, we have the potential to really kind of reach for new ideas and really deliver value and
wow.
really be brilliant.
Wow. Alan, thank you so much for this show. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. And until next week, get out there, claim your brilliance, and we'll be right back with you next week for more of the same. Have a great week, everyone.